Welcome, Dr. Robinson. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. And you know, we've had a lot of these kinds of discussions over the years, a lot with Dr. Waterman and Dr. Scalay and Dr. Benson when it came to RMTC, whether it's the Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation, you know, work like this. I don't want to call it tedious, but it is, you know, it's hard work. It's work that it probably takes you down a lot of blind alleys. But when we read about successes and breakthroughs and, you know, ways that can help horses in a tangible way and give, you know, give, whether it's regulators, whether it's regulatory vets on track, if it gives them a tool to help protect the horse, it's good for the industry.
Absolutely. We're really excited about this study because it gives us the proof of principle that we can find things in the horse that are affected by shockwave therapy that we can measure in a blood sample taken from the horse. And that's what's really novel about this work. And it is tedious. I mean, it takes a long time. We've been working on this for about 10 years now. And it takes a long time because the tools are not available for horses, because the tools, even in being used in humans, are still in the discovery phase. And so we've had to do a lot of trial and error to get to this point. And I really want to thank, you know, the Pennsylvania Racing Commission is our primary funding source for my laboratory. They provided the funding for the majority of this work and initiated, gave us the approval to start looking into this, to these biomarkers. And then also the horsemen's groups in Pennsylvania have also all contributed, the Pennsylvania Harness Horsemen's Association, the Meadows Standardbred Owners Association, the Pennsylvania Horsemen's Benevolent Protective Association. And then as you mentioned at the start, we are so thankful now to the breeders. The Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association have gave us this tremendous gift to be able to expand on these studies and take the next step, which is to say, okay, we know these particular biomarkers, these things are changed in the blood after a horse receives shockwave. What about a horse that has an injury and then receives shockwave? You know, what about the clinical patients that are coming to New Bolton Center's hospital and then receive shockwave? What about the horses that are out in training and normal, in a normal training environment? We need to know what these markers are doing in all of those different cases in order to be able to make them useful for us. So we're very excited about these markers. There's a lot more work to be done. And we're still looking for more funding, too, to be able to support continuing this work.
Before we talk about the markers and the practicality and the application of it, when it comes to whether it's out of competition horses that are you know, coming into races, or, you know, how to apply potentially the benefit of this, I'd love for you to revisit for our listeners anyway, you know, because we've talked about shockwave with Dr. Alday many times, and the public at this point, the, you know, the horse players and casual fans, they're I think at a point where they hear shockwave and it's being put up there as a villainous treatment, and that's not fair. There's a ton of benefit to this, and I would love for you to talk about the concept and how, in your experience, you know, what and where the benefit can be derived when used appropriately and in, you know, a correct application, you know, toward a horse that's either rehabbing or, you know, has a specific injury. A lot of times we think about shins and strains, suspensory type, you know, ligament issues. I mean, talk a little bit about what this is before we can delve into the misapplication of it.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely correct. Shockwave is not bad in and of itself. It can be very therapeutic, and it also can alleviate pain of these musculoskeletal injuries. The way that it can accelerate healing is it increases blood flow. It causes a very brief acute inflammatory response, which is why we decided to look for inflammatory markers. But this acute inflammatory response increases blood flow to the area, and especially tissues like tendons and ligaments, they don't normally have a very good blood supply. And so by increasing the blood flow to those tissues, injured tissues, you can accelerate healing and speed up the healing process. The concern with shockwave is that we also know it can be just as effective as a nerve block at alleviating pain. And so if you use shockwave therapy, it's very critical for you to understand that the benefit is there, but you have to rest the horse. It is crucial that you rest your horse, because once the horse can't feel its injury anymore, it's going to go out there and push itself beyond what its physical capabilities are and potentially break something. And that's why shockwave is so critical to regulate, because we don't want people using it inappropriately and trying to use it for its pain-relieving properties without giving the horse the rest it needs to recover from its injury. That is the crucial piece with using shockwave therapy correctly. It can speed up healing, but you have to rest your horse after giving it.
It's one of several treatments that that can be obviously beneficial and promote healing and be positive, have a positive effect. The abuse, and I suppose this is like any area that we could talk about that. Can be exploited and be, used improperly. When it came to attacking this project and trying to figure out a way to identify the treatments, I mean, what is the window that I see in the piece that Dan wrote that you sense that you can identify potentially treatment within 21 days, give or take.
So the shockwave is prohibited. It depends on the jurisdiction, but in most jurisdictions, it's between 10 to 7 days prior to the race.
Right.
And that is because the effects of the shockwave on pain relieving effects are expected to wear off by then. So that at that point, if your horse is not lame anymore, then that indicates that the healing has occurred. If you try to exercise them within that window without allowing the rest period, that's when you have a risk of having a horse have an injury because of the shockwave treatment. So in our study, we were really excited to see that we were able to detect changes in one of the markers for 3 weeks after giving shockwave therapy. So that gives us an actual a wider window than what we really need at this point in time. And we're going to have to figure out, what do we do with that? Now, that same marker is also affected by other things. And so we need to be able to look at the big picture and figure out, what other things might also be affecting the level of this marker. And ultimately, what we think we're going to have to do is to look at each horse individually and take multiple samples from the same horse over time to be able to understand what these markers mean. So our long-term goal, we're going to be collecting samples from horses that are in training, horses that are injured, and collect them over time and see what is happening to these markers And can we come up with an algorithm of changes in these markers that indicates, okay, it's now it's safe, or no, it's not?
You know, there's been a couple of different pieces of news on this front. There was this news about the study and the results that, and where potentially you are with identifying the markers. Then there was Dr. Parkin that came out with the epidemiology work. And one of the things, Mary, that I thought was kind of a hand-in-glove part of, particularly of Dr. Parkin's report, it shouldn't or wouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that the incidence of you know, catastrophic or significant injury of any kind would come with horses that had been treated with Shockwave. You wouldn't be treating the horse with Shockwave if there wasn't already some preconceived issues. No?
Well, yes, I think theoretically that is true, that you wouldn't want to just indiscriminately give Shockwave therapy to your horses, that you're going to be using it because they have some sort of lameness. But there are so many different types of things that we use Shockwave therapy for. That's, again, a limitation of our study. We only looked at one type of Shockwave. We looked at giving it to one location on the horse. And so there's a lot of variables that we still need to figure out yet.
Expand on that. And what other, you know, what are the other places, or what did you concentrate on? And from your experience, you know, whether they're misapplications or whether they're, you know, I'm sure that people have experimented in different ways to, you know, to see if the Shockwave therapy would be helpful. What were the specifics of your work?
So our work looked at giving Shockwave to the dorsal surface of the cannon bone. So it's the very front of the cannon bone. And we chose that area because we've seen that that area has been treated commonly in our hospital. And we used the instruments that we have within the hospital at New Bolton Center and a dose that we use commonly at New Bolton Center to treat cases. And so it was really just going with what do we see as most commonly used in our hands, in our clinic. There are lots of other machines out there. There are lots of other protocols out there. And there are lots of other locations on the horse that Shockwave is being used. So, you know, in our study, we really just went with what was the most common in our hands, and we wanted to start there as to provide proof of principle that this would even work. I mean, this is, I have to share that this was not my idea originally. This was Dr. Lawrence Soma, my predecessor's idea, to look for biomarkers of Shockwave. And to be honest, I was pretty skeptical that we would see these changes in the bloodstream, you know, circulating in the horse from giving just one single dose of Shockwave to a peripheral leg, you know, to the leg. So it really is. It's a start, but there's a long way to go. We need to look at other types of instruments. We need to look at other types of protocols to really make sense of what all of this means.
The what you describe as extracorporeal is that designed? And it sounds like when you mentioned the front of the cannon bone, that sounds like sore shins. There's obviously effect for both skeletal and muscle areas. So this was more skeletal than soft tissue, the work?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. Is the research that you would do, would there be different biomarkers depending on the area, depending on Or is there going to be just a general response that is identifiable?
I suspect it. it will be a general response because these are all inflammatory markers. And so what we're seeing are the response of the immune system to this treatment.
Interesting.
But that needs to be proven. You know, that's just speculation at this point. That's our next hypothesis.
Interesting. You know, shockwave, as you mentioned earlier, shockwave used with human athletes as well, and not just specifically athletic endeavors. Does the horse is the response to shockwave similar in horse and human athletes?
So I don't know of any studies where they've looked at the biomarkers in the blood of humans after giving shockwave. However, the response in other species, you know, including humans, does seem to be similar. In all cases, you get an increase in the blood flow to the area. And so I would expect the inflammatory response to be similar across species.
Which I don't pretend to be a vet, I'm just the things that I'm curious about I'm assuming people have the same, you know, kind of response. How quickly would you think that you can utilize the results of work like this and create a test and an application that could be, you know, successfully used to screen horses? I mean, on the racetrack, for instance, nobody can operate a shockwave machine without notice. And, you know, if there's people that are the technicians that do it on the racetrack, the treatments are well recorded. I mean, the concern or the area that would be more difficult would be on horses that are out at training centers and, you know, that aren't as closely monitored. So I suppose the way to conceive of this as a execution on the racetrack, for regulators, for regulatory vets, would be particularly with horses that are coming onto the racetrack from outside areas. I mean, how do you foresee, and it's not necessarily your job, Dr. Robinson, either to handle this, but how difficult do you think it would be to have a fast response test that, regulatory vets could utilize to be able to keep horses that were treated too closely to race day to keep them and exclude them from the track, from the race, from racing?
Well, that is clearly what we're all working toward. The more people that work on this, the better. We're all working toward developing a biological passport, which is really, I think, what you're referring to and what these biomarkers ultimately will give us. The technology to be able to do stall side testing has been advancing quite rapidly in human medicine, and we're partnering with some organizations to look at using that technology for use at the stall side as well, so that regulatory veterinarians would be able to measure these biomarkers before the race in the horses, and then hopefully prevent any horses that have concerning biomarkers from racing. That's the ultimate goal. As far as how long that's going to take, it's certainly, I think, years out. The equine biobank that are established and are continuing to add samples to is going to enable us to develop it more quickly. And I'm really interested in working with some of my other colleagues as well to test other biomarkers using these biobank samples. Hopefully within the next 5 years or so, we will be able to do stall side testing for various biomarkers to have the biological passport in place. That's the goal.
Well, it's the backstory that and the reaction, you know, to these areas of concern that, to me, it is important to relate. And, you know, obviously this all takes financing and it takes, patient work. I I know that the stakeholders, Dr. Robinson, in the game and the horse players, and I mean virtually everybody in all the areas that that the sport involves. We all want as many answers and solutions as possible, but having a discussion like this is important for people to understand, what's involved to gain, leverage in this endeavor and how difficult it is. And, we understand, I think the public understands, when it comes to detecting, figuring out illegal drugs, not permissible medications that are, that are legal and used to help the horse. But when it comes to detecting things that shouldn't be in a racehorse, it's always kind of an arms race. And it's always always chasing an elusive target. This is, this is much more of a stationary, target, something that is really tangible and can be, can be approached. And if it's got it, however long it takes, there's a benefit to, to getting to the goal.
Absolutely. I mean, it will be a game changer once we get there.
Well, obviously, we thank you for the work and everything that goes on at New Bolton. There's so many areas. And, of course, New Bolton came into the public consciousness on a widespread basis. I mean, when it came to the industry and it came to horsemen, pre-Barbaro, everyone inside the game knew. But to a wider audience, Barbaro's travail and the fight against laminitis really put New Bolton in a major spotlight, and this is the kind of work that was going on when nobody knew about New Bolton.
That's right. It's a really great place. I'm really happy to be a part of it.
Talk about your background and how much involvement you've had previously when it came to the racehorses and the equine sport side of things.
Well, I actually grew up mucking stalls for riding lessons. I fell in love with horses at a really young age, but came from a background where we couldn't afford to have horses ourselves. So I worked for lessons and decided I wanted to become a veterinarian when I was in high school, went to college, to Dickinson College, to pursue pre-veterinary studies, and then fell in love with research at Dickinson. Worked for Merck Pharmaceuticals as an intern, and then I went to PennVet's Veterinary Medical Scientist Training Program, which was just instrumental in setting me up for the career that I have now. At the end of that program, I met Dr. Lawrence Soma. He was one of my professors, and he had the perfect position for me. And I have to also thank the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium for sponsoring my postdoctoral fellowship with him that allowed me to do work on this project as well as others. So I worked with Dr. Soma for several years until he retired, and at that point was fortunate to be able to take over running this fantastic research operation.
That's wonderful, and for those that aren't that might be in different parts of the country, if you've never heard of Dickinson, as fabulous a small liberal arts school in Carlisle, Pennsylvania as there is, and I perked up just hearing Dickinson mentioned. My brother went to Muhlenberg, and I was, if I hadn't gotten into Colgate early decision, I was probably headed to Dickinson. Just a fabulous place.
Absolutely. I love my time at Dickinson, and I still have a relationship with them. We have students come and spend time with us in the summer from Dickinson. It's really a great place.
Well, and for those that are taking their kids around to schools, liberal arts education, and you can see it can take take a young person anywhere in any direction. And for Dr. Robinson into this spot that is helping, you know, potentially groundbreaking work, already groundbreaking work, but the groundbreaking results for the industry. Dr. Robinson, a real pleasure. I really appreciate the visit.
Very nice speaking with you too, Steve. Thank you for inviting me.
Not at all. Dr. Mary Robinson from New Bolton, University of Pennsylvania. And this is, you know, this is work that can't be championed and spotlighted enough. You know, we do it with our long-term conversations we've had with RMTC, and you know, whether, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. Waterman and Dr. Scalay and Dr. Benson, who of course has moved on to now to the Stronach Group as their equine medical director. But this is, you know, this is the only way to get results. Whether it's, you know, fighting against illegal drug use, or whether it's, you know, trying to create an avenue, an angle on an issue like this. And I thought it was important to help people understand that the Shockwave is not a villainous, when you hear it, no one's doing something, ideally, no one's doing anything illegal. They're trying to promote blood flow to an area to help speed healing and recovery. You know, but like anything, it can be misused and, you know, can be misapplied. So here's work to try to short circuit that concept of misusing of Shockwave. That was great. Dr. Robinson. Top of the hour. Andy, we are going to get Andy in here. Andy's got some time. We're going to get Andy Serling in next. And then we'll visit with Elizabeth Dobles, who got her first graded stake win on Saturday, sending out War Story. And I think Elizabeth also, I think she comes from, she's from upstate. She's another that comes from the Finger Lakes region. So we'll talk to Elizabeth. Back after this with Andy Serling.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our Racehorse Development Fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. Top five after the hour. That was, I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope it was informative. Dr. Mary Robinson, and nice to have a resource to go to at New Bolton. So it has been mayhem here this morning between the stall guy, the guy doing the stove downstairs and having to take care of that, and not just now a FedEx delivery. The kitchen is... It's inching very close. Andy Serling inching closer, and he's joining us. And the season-ending conversation.